Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1992, the podcast where we talk about the films of 1992 here from our perch in 2023. I am one of your hosts, Phyllis Gove.
I'm your special guest host, Emily St. James, sitting in for your normal host, Pollution.
Amazing.
I had like a really elaborate one all planned, and I was like, no, it should just be Pollution.
I mean, that's, it is Pollution. Who's here.
What's the elaborate one? Now I want to know the alternate universe. What is the elaborate one?
Oh, it was like, it was something I had gone deep on Smog Monster mythos.
And then
I was like, no, this is too complicated. This week needs to be simple. Some weeks it needs to be complicated. But I mean, Fern Gully,
this is a, I mean, we're going to talk climate change at a certain point because this movie goes there in 1992 and it's 2023 and all of the Republican nominees say climate change is a hoax.
They're doing less of that, honestly. If you notice, the language has actually changed in the last few years. They don't call it a hoax as much as they call it, look at you're like biting your lip.
Did you watch the debate last night?
I did not watch the debate, so that's, maybe that's okay.
The thing about the debate is they're talking out of both sides of their mouth, where they're like, well, it's not real, but then they're like, well, here's all the ways we need to combat climate change. It's basically like the divide now is, it's not actually happening, but if it were, the government should not compel us to do anything about it, and gas should be cheap. And it's just, that's sort of like the position they planted on.
Unless you're Vivek, in which case it's a hoax. But that being said, with us today, podcaster, writer, actor Terry Gamble is here to talk with us about Fern Gully, a movie that I mean, as Emily knows, I reach out to a whole bunch of, you know, frequent guests, friends, what have you. And many people wanted to talk about Fern Gully. Fern Gully is surprisingly has a long tail from 1992. Emily, had you seen Fern Gully before this?
No. You know what? We talk a lot on this show about how I wasn't, like, I didn't see a lot of movies. I was specifically forbidden from seeing this movie.
Why? Like,
why?
I mean, we could talk about that in a second, but we kind of just did. No,
it had an agenda.
Was your family too conservative for this movie?
I grew up in a household that was like, the earth is man's domain and we are to use it however we want, and trying to conserve it is not worth it because God is coming back.
Jesus? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Jesus is coming back. Therefore,
when I try to do whatever. Explain why people are like, oh, why don't the Republicans get it? I was like, because they've been told everything is theirs and to just use it because Jesus is going to come save us. So you don't have a worry for tomorrow. You don't have the same care or you know, even though God said, be my shepherds and watch my flock and take care of everybody, which is also not happening. You know,
yeah, it feels like there's a lot of mixed messages in the Bible. I don't know, guys.
Wait,
I mean, I think modern I think that modern evangelicals have picked and chosen certain things that they want to take from the Bible. That might be a pretty radical idea to like be introduced.
Well, that they're picking the things that resonate with them. Nah,
it is interesting though. Not to make this all not to get too political. Although this movie is surprisingly political in its own way, but I do want to say that like. The climate change question last night at the Republican debate came from someone under 25 who was genuinely concerned about the future of this planet and was completely just ignored and essentially mocked by the. So I agree with what you're saying, Emily, that but what's interesting is that generationally, it feels as though this is a political issue. Like it does feel like below a certain age, most people are like, we should not destroy this planet.
I don't think that's true either.
Okay.
I really think it depends on where you're at and where you're from. Because I have people back, I mean, where I grew up, I'm not that far away. I'm in LA now, but I grew up in San Diego and it is conservative as all get out. And they are still, I still have friends that are like drill baby drill, you know, that are.
I think it's very much like.
That are in their 30s.
If you're in your 20s, 30s, you're probably more likely to admit climate change exists regardless of political valence. But you're also like much less like there, like if you are conservative or, you know, arch conservative or far right or whatever, you're much less likely to be like the government should solve this problem and much more likely to be like, what if we all lived under domes? You know, like so
I guess what I mean, more than anything, I do think that. Generationally it is a concern or a thing that people under 25 are thinking about how they're trying to process said information. I agree with you differs, but I do think that I'm just sort of the reason I'm bringing this up is I do feel like this film, which comes out in 1992 and is very progressive on the climate change issue, I mean surprisingly so, in the research that I did, there was a whole bunch of stuff that they did in order to make this an environmentally conscious film. The poster was printed on recycled paper. Merchandise was used environmentally conscious packaging. I mean, this was you don't see that today. I mean, that is kind of insane to think about in 1992 that they were like so attempting to go down that road. And now, I mean, I'm not even sure an Inconvenient Truth was on recycled paper.
You will see that thing in the end credits that's like, this was made sustainably when carbon neutral or
right,
but like
right,
you know
right.
Who the fuck knows what that means,
buying credits blah blah blah, that's such BS, but right. It's a BS science, but I'm sure that's they probably did something like that. I think it's just interesting of this timing though, because it's like the tail end of HW, you know, going into Clinton this year in this particular climate. So I think part of that was like that backlash and reaction and people wanting that, you know, progressive movement to have a push, and this really pushed a lot of us. I was 13 when I saw this movie. I saw it in the movie theater. I chose this movie because I saw it on a field trip, not a field trip, a slumber party. My best friend's little sister, she turned 5, I was 13. I was the oldest person at this party. The youngest person was 2, but we went to Fern Gully as part of the, but I was like the entertaining best friend who always went over at their house. And she was like, Terry has to come to my party. I was like, yes, I got you, kid.
Sure.
So we went to this. And so I think it galvanized a whole bunch of little kids too, like that went and saw this movie. And they are those kids that you speak of now that have grown up and have spent their whole lives. And I'm on a kickball team and we had a game last night. That's why I did not watch the debate. Because I was out kicking balls.
Sure. And nor should you, by the way. Don't watch the debate.
No, I feel good that I didn't.
I feel like, there's no need to. Go ahead.
I'm just watching like TikTokers rip into them. That's fine.
As you should. Yeah.
But the kids that I play with, I say the kids because I'm like their elder states lady on the kickball team at you know, in my 40s, and they are like, you know, in their 20s and 30s, of the kids which we speak of. And they all got really excited. I was like, I have to leave because they wanted me to go to the after party. And I was like, I got to go home and watch Fern Gully, kids. I got to talk about it in the morning.
Yeah.
And they were like, like literally like their eyes lit up and were so excited. And they were just like, that movie was everything. And I've heard that over and over again, you know, coming into this, seeing a meme the day I think we booked this of like someone posting that all the kids who watch Ferngully now are witches, like all those girls.
I mean, it does feel like a movie that, I mean, I also saw it in the theater. I was 12 when this came out, and I have a pretty vivid, I think I saw it with my grandmother, but I do feel like.
Are you a witch now, Phil?
Obviously. I think. Yeah. Are Warlock? Men warlocks? Yeah, I was going to say.
I think I it's know. Now. It's more, now it's a new age. Yeah. I think it's more gender day. Neutral now.
Yeah. Like, do we still say widower?
We should. We should just start calling everyone a widower, even if you're married.
Cool. Yeah, I feel like this movie was just, it had its moment. It wasn't as successful as I thought it was in the theater, but I think it had a long life on video cassette and DVD and that.
Yeah. Shit.
Watched it a lot.
And Netflix.
And it did have a sequel, but I do feel like, this movie, and forgive me if to feed this, you know, film Twitter nonsense, but Avatar felt like everyone was like, Avatar is just Ferngully. It felt like this, there was like people kept saying that he's ripping off Ferngully. And there was actually a lawsuit, if I'm not mistaken, or something close to a lawsuit that didn't actually go forward because the movie's playing within myths, right? Like it's not structurally,
I believe James Cameron could prove he had the dream for Avatar in college. He had like a journal he'd written it down and they were like, okay.
Right. I mean, it's the only reason that I bring this up is because it is sort of interesting how, I mean, as is the case with so many children's films and animated films and Disney films, quite frankly, they're based on either fairy tales or on some sort of, you know, old myths and old stories. So to say that James Cameron is stealing from that, I think is absurd. Like James Cameron tends to write things within sort of very strict,
it's the public
old
domain,
school.
Every yeah. man. Yes, yeah, we get
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thousand
so
Faces.
Anyway, all that being said,
Joseph Campbell, whatever, like he's totally in that. Yeah,
totally. And then Emily last night emailed us, you know, and said, if it was Avatar, he would have stayed a bug person. And I mean, I
he
think that's have. True. It's true.
I watched this and was like, I would stay a bug person.
I was surprised he left.
Yeah. Well, he has to go take the news of Ferngully to the people.
Let's say you need a prophet. You got to send them back to the people, right? So he's lived a life on both sides now. So we need to, you know.
He's a changed human. Mm-hmm, I want to give a little context for our listeners who might not have seen Ferngully. The synopsis of this film is that Krista, voiced by Samantha Mathis, who I weirdly had a dream last night that I met and talked with her about Ferngully.
I met her in the 90s, and she's lovely. Yeah, yeah, I have a beautiful picture with her. Yeah. She's so sweet. Yeah.
She follows me on Twitter. We follow each other. She seems lovely. Is a fairy who lives in Ferngully, a rainforest in Australia that has never seen a human before. In fact, she is told they are extinct. But when a logging company comes near the rainforest, she sees that they do exist and even eventually shrinks one of them, a boy named Zach, voiced by Jonathan Ward. Now her size, Zach sees the damage that the company has done and helps Krista to stop not only them, but an evil entity named Hexus, voiced by Tim Curry, who feeds off of pollution. Ferngully opened on April 10th, 1992 against Sleepwalkers, Basic Instinct, White Men Can't Jump, Beethoven, and of course, The Mighty Ducks. What a murderer's row. It would go on to make $32 million on a $24 million budget at a 67% on Rotten Tomatoes from critics, 64% from audiences. Roger Ebert gave the film 3 stars and said, Ferngully, The Last Rainforest, continues the fiction so reassuring at times that the most dangerous animal is man. The story involves the destruction of the rainforest. I am in favor of saving the rainforest, and I'm appalled by their wanton destruction. But is it not true that man is the only animal to which it has ever occurred that murder is wrong? Nature is the least sentimental of creations, as depicted most accurately in the old cartoon that shows a row of fishes, each one smaller than the next, lined up with their mouths open, all ready to eat each other cheerfully. Is it the nature of all living things to feast off of one another's living things? In order for us to survive. What are you talking about, Roger fucking Ebert? He gives this film 3 stars and then he goes into a whole thing about how, like, shouldn't we be allowed to destroy the rainforest? I don't really understand.
I don't think he's saying we should be allowed to destroy the rainforest. I think he's saying that, like, Humanity is the only species that would think to save the rainforest. We're simultaneously the species that can destroy and that can save. You know, so what are we doing here talking about Fern Gully when we should be, like, I don't know, recycling more?
What are 90s, we doing?
90s environmental messaging was so all over the map, and I think that's part of why it kind of like struggled to take hold. But like,
like
people were like, you should recycle more, and that was like the thing people did, because that was like the one consistent, like,
when
message.
Did recycling start?
Well, that's because that is was all like, it's like the cigarette people kind of thing, where it's like, it's good for you having the doctors. Like, they literally, it's the plastic people created the recycling campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They basically wanted us to use more of the stuff, and then they put the onus on us instead of on them. Do you know what I mean, though, to actually do that? So that's literally PR to get us to feel like we were the ones responsible for everything.
Sure.
When it's technically big conglomerates and corporations choosing certain types of packaging because it is cheaper for them once they figured out how to use it and just mine the fuck out of it. Oh, sorry. I don't know if there's bad words allowed.
No, you can go. Whatever. Please, okay.
I'm sorry. Crazy. I was like, sailor, hi.
I do think that. So I just looked up when recycling started.
Mm-hmm.
And it, because I was trying to remember, because there was a moment, which I think we're all kind of referring to, where like blue bins started, right? Like we actually started separating things. And I feel like it was in like the late 80s, early 90s is when it kind of started. I guess technically speaking, in California, it starts in 89. So it which is kind of later than I thought, but it's kind of amazing that there was a time when we just threw everything in a fucking bin. And
we
just, crazy.
Growing up in South Dakota, we did not have recycling until I like was in college. So early 2000s, the town I grew up in didn't have a recycling. Like, you could separate out your recyclables and then take them to a nearby city and leave them there. But nobody was going to fucking do that.
Yeah.
It's just like, like, what is interesting about this period in environmental discussion is that, like, it is kind of bipartisan. Like, the Reagan administration almost does something about climate change. And then it's like, but we'd have to make oil companies do something. So we're not going to do that. Yeah. But, like, you know, George H.W. Bush signed some groundbreaking environmental legislation. A lot of our environmental laws we're still sort of clinging to were signed by Nixon. So, like, there is this weird bipartisan consensus on basically we should keep everything clean. Like, that's kind of what everybody can agree on. And then growing up in this era evangelical, it was very much like, well, that's stupid. We should just be like using everything we can. We should destroy everything. We should be smaller fish. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We have to reach every corner of the earth. Right. Like, we have to make sure we touch everything so that Jesus will come. Because I grew up, my family's Seventh-day Adventist. So growing up with that. Your face, Phil. It's pretty. It's very.
I mean,
we have a thing called the Three Angels Message. That's okay.
Can you break that down for us Jewish Canadians that might not know what?
Oh my God! Well, I grew up Seventh-day Adventist, and I had to keep the Jew like laws because we had Sabbath, so I had to go to church on Saturday. I took my SATs at like the Jewish day school on a Sunday, like all that stuff. So I'm familiar with all of that. So all your stuff. Plus the Jesus stuff on top.
Cool.
So imagine that. Cool. Super cool.
I think it's great that you knew all of these things though, right? Like, I don't know how, I mean,
So we had to, so the Three Angels Message is basically the idea is in Matthew like 28, and it basically says, go out into all the world and preach, you know, to everyone. Everyone has heard the word of God and knows Jesus, that's when Jesus will come.
Exactly.
So that's why they have missionaries like literally all over the world. So same kind of similar with Latter Day, where it's like we have to go literally everywhere and just like tell everyone. And so when we have that last, like, you know, that Amazon tribe, or that last tribe that everyone's trying to get to, and they're like, oh my God, you're going to get killed if you go down there because they're like going to murder you.
And they do.
They do, which I love every time, so bad. The idea is like, people are like, why aren't they leaving them alone? I'm like, because you've been taught that you cannot, you have to go tell them about Jesus. And then once this tribe probably knows, everyone thinks that Jesus will probably come again because everyone's
heard
at this point.
It's all about indoctrination. Is that ultimately what we're talking
about? I want to go on a tangent in here. Sorry.
Please.
Phil, have you seen The Descent? I assume not.
Please. No.
Terry, I assume you've seen The Descent. Yeah.
Yes.
So, do we think the like hardcore evangelicals who believe they have to witness to everyone are trying to get to the cave people from the dissent. Because it seems like that'd be pretty hard. It seems
they
like
they're
going
to have to. And that's, yeah. I think the thing is like, they're still trying to figure out. That's why they're destroying everything. So we're like, we have to see what's underneath everything. We have to see what's everywhere. We have to find if there's any other people, any other people anywhere, everywhere.
We have to find the cave people because they're, we have to talk to them.
Can we make shirts that say we have to find the cave people? And just like,
that's our first 92 merch.
Forgive me. I need to parse this out a little bit because I have not seen The Descent, nor do I really understand the religious context that we're talking about here. So
I love it.
So the Descent about a cave that people get trapped in.
It's about six women who are on a caving expedition. They're like hardcore extreme cavers. And they go into this cave that nobody's explored in a long time. And the first half of the movie is so fucking scary and has no like monsters or anything in it. It's just like, what if you got stuck? What if you just like were wedged in a crevasse in a cave and you couldn't move? It's very bad. It's very bad.
See,
it's,
as a claustrophobic person, that seems like a bad idea.
Oh, yeah. Then, it's terrifying and it's dark.
Then they get down into the depths of the cave and there's cave people down there. And the moment when you reveal that there's like cannibal cave people through like a night vision camera over somebody's shoulder, there's just this guy looming, is like one of the scariest moments in all the film. I'm like a horror nut. I watch a lot of horror. This movie fucked me up. It's great. You should watch it, Phil. It's one of my favorite movies ever.
Why would you suggest that? Are you trying to scar me? Are you trying to create trauma in my life?
Like watch it at 10 in the morning with all the lights on and all, like, make sure the sun's on. That's important.
The sun's on.
The sun's on. Fully that. Like, I am a big promoter of that. I mean, I do a horror movie, you know, podcast, but like, I sometimes I'm like, that's a 6 a.m. movie. Like, there's some movies I will literally watch as the sun is rising to make sure that I have a whole day for like comedy on top of it. Sure. It is one of those for sure, but it is damn good. Yeah. And those, it's just the tension's so great. And also just, it's also really good. Just the work between all the women who are just like the tension of
Like a super depressing ending too.
It does sort of.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you mean. What's depressing for you? No.
Okay. So here's okay. So now to rewind for me, this idea is this in the Bible that like,
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah. Okay.
Matthew 28.
So if you tell everyone about Jesus, he'll come back.
Yes.
Correct. So are there still quote unquote untouched people? Thus, Jesus has not come back.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
There's a tribe on, I think, an island in the Indian Ocean who is uncontactable. And like, this is a thing that like we know as just like people, because occasionally someone will like have their boat wash up on this island and then they just disappear. Like it happens every 50 years.
Right.
And every so often a missionary will go there and just get shot by arrows. Like and there are probably uncontacted tribes elsewhere, but this is like the one we definitely know about. Is
okay,
they're on this island and if you want to go to them they will kill you. So they don't know about Jesus. They don't know about don't know about television. They probably don't know about Fern Gully, honestly.
Well, this is obviously our episode on Fern Gully. So
Fern Gully.
There are. So I do think, though, this is one of those movies that and this is kind of a thing that happened in the early mid 90s, where with the enormous success of Disney, you had these offshoot animation companies, obviously Don Bluth and Spielberg. Tried to kind of do their whole thing, which was, you know, quite successful for the most part. But there's sort of offshoot stuff. This is a kind of anomaly movie in the sense that like it did relatively well. It had a pretty big following, but it was done by this, I believe it was an Australian animation company.
I always assumed it was Don Bluth. It has nothing to do with
nothing to do with him. Yeah.
It's one thing I think is interesting is like a lot of these animated movies get greenlit because of The Little Mermaid. And obviously The Little Mermaid is a hit, but in 89 it was a sensation. It was not yet a world dominating thing that everybody knows about. It was like still kind of niche. It was a big animated movie, but animation was still kind of a niche thing. And Don Bluth had had a couple hit, had had American Tail and Land Before Time right before that. Those were both fairly big hits. It is interesting to me that Little Mermaid makes everybody say, we got to do more animation. And in terms of the timeline, it has to be that movie. Because like it was, again, it was big, but it was not like Batman big. You know, it wasn't Aladdin big. We're still a few years away from when Aladdin and Lion King become the biggest movies ever. But like everybody saw the upside for some reason. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's to sort of underline your point, it's also incredibly time consuming, incredibly expensive, and not a guarantee that it's going to be successful. So to your point, it's interesting that The Little Mermaid is this beacon where everyone's like, we got to follow this thing. But I mean, my guess is Frankly comes out in 92. It's probably put into pre-production shortly after The Little Mermaid, to your point, right? Like, so it's kind of crazy.
They'd been trying to make it for years. And then the success of The Little Mermaid means that they can get the money to do it. And I don't know what you're saying about it being time consuming to do animation. After I watched this last night, I made an animated movie, released it to theaters. It's made a lot of money. It's called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
They had to make it quickly because Robin Williams went in and did what he did, where he you know, did all this ad-libbing. So they had to make it quickly, right?
Yeah.
Well, we talked about Aladdin. That was our first episode that we did of 1992 that we did with SD Heim. And we talked a little bit about obviously the Robin Williams of it all, but I want to kind of talk about two things. The first is Robin Williams is clearly a guy who you just put a microphone in front of and it just kind of, okay. I'm just looking at the chat that Terry sent us in terms of, this is the Bible quote?
Yeah, this is the biblical quote.
This is Matthew 28:19.
Yeah.
I'm not going to read it, but
is why Aaron Sorkin is wrong. Continue.
Oh, cool. So what I was saying is that Robin Williams feels like a guy where you put a microphone in front of him and he gives you 20 hours of material and then you go off and you animate that. He does Ferngully before Aladdin. And Disney specifically Katzenberg, didn't like that he had this other animated movie. So it created this kind of discord between the two of them, which is only exacerbated by Disney kind of screwing Robin Williams in a bunch of ways when Robin was very specific about the way that he wanted this film, Aladdin, to come out. And in the process, they quashed and kind of fucked over Ferngully's theatrical release as well. So like it couldn't be in as many theaters and quite frankly, might have led to why it wasn't as successful as it could have been.
Well, also Mighty Ducks, another Disney property coming right up against them at the same time.
It's all kind of and there was like a theater count thing, if I'm not mistaken, because I remember here reading. So, shortly after signing up the film, Robin Williams was approached about voicing the genie in Aladdin. He accepts. Katzenberg got wind of the fact that Ferngully existed. And then Katzenberg went out of his way to sabotage Ferngully, such as taking over studios the production had rented by paying more and attempting to buy space and forcing them. Real kind of like, you know, fucking shitbag stuff to do. But, you know,
So Disney must own Ferngully now because they own the 20th Century Fox. I think this is in the Fox library.
It is.
So like Ferngully could be like a Kingdom Hearts level. Like that's a thing that could happen. Like that.
I mean, I got to be honest, as I was watching this film, I did think to myself, I'm a little surprised no one has tried to tap into the Ferngully verse. Like it does feel like it's pretty ripe for something. I mean, I'm a little surprised.
There is all this fucking early 90s environmental stuff aimed at kids. There's this in Captain Planet. There's Echo the Dolphin. There's the computer game Eco Quest. Mm-hmm. Like it is kind of fascinating. It's just like, and a lot of that stuff's pretty trashy. I'm just going to say up front, I'm not a Ferngully fan. I watched this for the first time in my 40s. And I was like, this movie seems like it's made for kids.
St. Jams, it absolutely is.
I can't wait for our Beethoven episode if you're pulling this kind of
I saw Beethoven when I was a child though, so I have enough nostalgic memories of the Big B to be like
I think this is similar enough to like what they're kind of doing. If you're talking, get like a modern equivalent with the Tinkerbell, kind of like they have a Tinkerverse kind kind of sure, right now sure, with all sure. the fairies, and they have all those little offshoots. And that's what I think they're, if Disney owns this, technically, I feel like that's what they're focused on. If you're looking for some little fairy show.
It just feels like now, you know, not to bring this back to climate change, but it does feel a little bit like you could do this right now in a way that would really connect.
Yeah.
I'm just, so
I think, I do think somebody will take a chance. Like Apple made that climate change show that's yes, for adults. Right, it's not for kids, but like, I do think that like, you know, if Disney did it, they would like get in, you know, people would be like, this is too woke. I think it's too controversial.
You're right.
To make a show about how we're all going to die because we've destroyed the planet.
Yeah, I hear that. I mean, I think that there is kind of a, there's a mysticism to this movie that gives you a little bit of cover too, right? Mm-hmm. Where like, you don't have to be so, like, don't get me wrong. Jax, is it Jax? What's the guy's, the main character's name? Forgive me. Zach today, I think you'd be hard pressed to do the construction worker with a heart of gold. Like, he, you know what I mean? Like, I think
he
that'd be
seems
tough.
Like he's maybe like 12 and also maybe like in his like mid 30s. Like, yeah, he can't,
he's sort of time.
He's a man child. He's a man child, like, fully.
That's, you know, this like the Judd Apatow team should reboot Fern Gully. It should just should just be
Seth
about
broken as Zach. Hey.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I would watch the hell out of that. But I do would, so yeah. I the Krista character, who kind of has this like Bjorkish nymph vibe, which I'm very much into, in terms of like this sprightly kind of angelic fairy kind of thing, with a little bit of edge to her, I think is a great character. And I would argue she's the lead of this movie. Mm-hmm. And Zach is going along for the ride.
They really flip the usual fairy story. I think the humans are extinct. No, they're real. I think my big problem with this movie is I think Samantha Mathis, who I love normally, I just watched the Peter Bogdanovich movie, The Thing Called Love, and she's fantastic in that. And her hair is astonishing. I think her performance in this is terrible. I think this is really bad work by her and really bad work by Jonathan Ward. Like, Jonathan Ward does not have a illustrious career by any means. I don't put it on them.
Steel Magnolias.
Listen. I know.
Wait, is he in Steel Magnolias?
Yes. The guy's had, he had a career.
I'm sorry.
Look him up.
He's but yeah, I think that the directors,
he's played a lot of mean guys too.
This is so early in the careers of people, just regular old ass people, regular actors doing voiceover, that like the directors don't yet know to ask them to heighten it by 15%. No. Samantha Mathis is giving a great performance for live action. In animation, it kind of gets swallowed, especially when you have Robin Williams right there doing his whole thing. Yeah.
And Tone freaking Loke. Yes.
I mean, Tim Curry bringing it and understands how to, like, you know, go big.
He knows how to do
this.
Drama. Yes. Yeah.
And he's tremendous in this. I don't know if you guys have watched the recording. There's a YouTube of Tim Curry recording the song, Toxic Love. That is single-handedly the horniest thing I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, this is not for kids.
He does, though, I'm so sorry, is very horny. And it doesn't matter. That's
as
just who he is. And
I am not
I
in any
love
way
him
judging.
So much.
But in this particular video, I was like, wow. I can't believe you actually put this on film. It's tremendous.
I mean, Hexus is fucking hot. Like, Hexus is hot. He's
Pollution's very sexy. Why is Pollution so sexy? Maybe that should be the shirt.
That's a bigger question.
Every time, you know what? When there were floodwaters in LA, I was like, I better bathe in these because it's hot. It's so
toxic
sexy.
Love. Yeah. I think that you're absolutely right, Emily, that Robin Williams, Tim Curry understand the assignment. Tone Loke understand the assignment. And because Krista and Zach are a little flat, I mean, the movie,
well, you also have Cheech and Chong. Like, that's part of the problem is like, you have these, like, not problem, but like, you have these amazing people around them. I don't know. I looked up Lion King like right after, because I was like, what's the, I was like, oh, Lion King's like 2 years later after
94,
this.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It just, I don't know.
I would honestly say Lion King is the first movie to figure out how to have those just two kind of normal voices in the center of a bunch of comedians. Mm-hmm. I think Aladdin's better at it than Ferngully, but I think when you think about great things about Aladdin, you don't think about the voice performances of Aladdin and Jasmine. You just don't. So yeah, I think it takes a while for animation as a field to, and like now, of course, they're great at it, but like animation as a field, it takes a second for them to come up with how are we going to cast a celebrity in our main role, but also have them give a credible vocal performance, because on-camera work is so different from just voice work, as we all know from the podcasting industry where we're professionals.
I mean, I think you're absolutely right though, Emily. Like I really do think that there is something to be said for, understanding the different levels and making sure that they could all kind of coexist. I mean, this movie, as you mentioned up top, is quite short. It's 74 minutes with credits. Like it's a brief movie, which I think is in its favor to a certain degree. I think that like keeping it short, keeping it kind of, you know, quippy and helps, but the scenes in particular between just Zach and Krista definitely feel low energy in comparison to like everything else around them.
Well, they're trying to force a love story that should not be there. It's so weird. I'm like, why?
I don't disagree, but I have to say that A Dream Worth Keeping rips. I mean,
the songs are generally good. I do like the songs. Like, yeah.
Songs are good. I mean, it is. I'll say this though: as good as the songs are, there's like no consistency. They're all drastically dissimilar in tone and vibe. So, another thing that I think these movies kind of realize pretty quickly, Emily, is, and I think hopefully you agree, but like, they get an Elton John to do a bunch of songs, or they get someone to kind of create this baseline so that all the songs feel of a piece. None of these songs feel of a piece. Like they're just so scattered.
No, but they also did get an Elton John song, so it is kind of that beautiful thing of like, I guess like you said, Emily, they were still trying to figure it out. They were like, well, that Elton John song was great for Ferngully, can we have him do everything for the Lion King? Like, you know, what do you do next? So
yeah, it's I mean, but when you have like Tone Loke and Gloria Estefan, is it Gloria Estefan? She has a song in this, right? Am I crazy? Am I making that up?
I think so.
I want to say she did, but forgive me if I'm completely wrong in that. I'm just looking up the soundtrack.
We have Thomas Dolby did a bunch of it, is one of the writers who I love.
Yeah.
Raffi.
It's Sheena Easton. That's who I unfortunately got that mixed up with, like Gloria Estefan.
That's okay.
And it should be said too that Robin Williams did perform Batty Rap. So it is him. I think the songs are fun. I enjoyed them, but there's kind of no rhyme or reason for some of them.
Anytime you have Thomas Dolby and Raffi contributing to your soundtrack, you're like, maybe a little bit like eclectic.
The Raffi song, yeah, it's just it's doing a lot. This movie just has so much going on. I also just, one little piece of trivia that I loved is that in Spain, this movie was dubbed entirely by comedian Angel Garro.
Hell yeah.
Single-handedly did every single voice, and he's in the Guinness Book of Records for it, which I think is incredible.
That is a insane fun fact, and I need to see that cut of it, like stat. Pero ahora, ahorita. I need it now.
I also think it's great that Tim Curry's original voice recordings were deemed too sinister and eerie, so he had to re-record them all because they made children cry during test screening.
Because he's already been like the darkness, you know what I mean, though? So like, he's already literally played Satan, so I think he's probably, I'm sure he went hard. I just, looking here too, Jimmy Buffett also wrote on this.
Correct.
Holy goodness.
Yeah, it's really, this movie is, for 74 minutes, Emily, you got to admit this movie's doing a lot.
I mean, yeah, I honestly, I think
like, that's, but is that good? But is that good?
Yeah, it's, I think, yeah, that maybe normally we'd make that a complaint. I don't know, but.
I also need to say that Robin Williams provided 14 hours worth of improvised dialogue for Batty. So, I mean, There you go.
I want to hear some of the other cuts, because I feel like there was probably so many other things that they could have thrown in there.
Yeah.
So how much of that is just him doing impressions of obscure political figures from the 50s and being like, see,
I thought you were going to say various types of bats.
Here's the thing. I watched this movie a couple days after. I play this game called Redactyl, where you fill in gaps in a Wikipedia article and figure out. I play it with my wife. We do that together. It's very fun. Okay. And sounds one lovely. Of the days, the answer was the classification for fruit bats, which is megabat. And that was all I could think about. Is Robin Williams going to say the word megabat? And he does not. He does not say the word megabat. Megabat.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. That's a good movie title. Megabat.
Would watch. Yeah, sounds great. Yeah. Just a giant
it
bat.
Would be
sounds
too awesome. Scary. You wouldn't watch it.
I'd watch that before I'd watch the fucking Descent.
Well, of course. Yeah. What if?
Yeah, because Descent is terrifying.
So this movie opens with some really lovely visuals that I really liked, which was like these almost cave paintings-esque kind of mystical what have you. I actually think this movie, which is mostly hand-drawn, they did implement some computer-generated animation, which really kind of obviously comes much more into the fold in Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and Lion. Like they start to use it for sort of set PC stuff. But I don't know. I mean, I really loved the kind of old school hand-drawn component of this movie. I thought it actually worked for this movie. But what did you guys think?
I love hand-drawn animation.
Yes.
But
you
also
say that as a question? Was there a
question? No, I just like that? I think you put this up. I think part of the problem is that like this has Robin Williams and Aladdin has Robin Williams and they're released within months of each other. And Aladdin's animation is so much better. It's just yeah, but go ahead, Terry.
And the genie is
so much better.
Go ahead. Please go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, but I love, like you're talking about the opening sequence. That's one of the things I had some fun notes on too. I just love that, like, it looked like handprints at first, but then you realize later, oh no, those are trees that are telling part of the story. And you're like, oh, okay, like, it's trying to connect us as humans to the earth. And I thought if you're just going to look at that one snippet for the minute, and that gives you kind of like the log line, so to speak, of the movie, it does it visually right there, tells you the story, kind of what we're connecting to. Right.
Totally.
I thought that was really beautiful and really smart. So anyhow,
I have to say that despite the fact that I do see where you're coming from, Emily, in terms of the fact that like this whole movie doesn't totally hold together, I did find myself watching it thinking about how thoughtful it was, that it did have sort of not just a really good message, but you could tell that like just a lot of thought and love was put into this thing. And I want to compare it to, like, you know, I worked in a video store for many years, as our listeners know, and there were so and continue to be so many straight to video kids movies. Especially after the sort of the Disney boom and they able to figure out a way to do kind of animation on the cheap, you'd have a lot of these kind of straight to video, you know, weird schmageggy companies making these like animated movies. And they would do well and some kids would watch them and parents were fine to plop their kids in front of them. And I feel like this movie kind of weirdly gets clumped in there a little bit with this sort of, because it's not Bluth, because it's not Disney, it feels sort of in this substandard kind of universe, which I don't think is, I'm not saying you're saying this, Emily, but I do think that like that's unfair to a certain degree. I do think this movie has more thought put into it than that.
It is a lot cheaper animation. Yeah. Like, and it's not like it's not direct to video cheap, but it's definitely like a missing link between that and Disney / Bluth, who are like really, at this point, they're both in like an arms race to see who can make the most sumptuous, animated 2D animated stuff. And this movie's just kind of like, you know, it is a thing that they very clearly had a tight budget on, and tight budgets affect even animation. And so like it definitely, it just feels a little chintzy, which is fine. You know, I think the message of this movie is good, and but there's definitely this feeling of, yeah, this is based on some like 500 of this lady's stories that they've compressed into like 76 minutes of movie.
Well, we got to get that deep lore real quick for the kids. I'm so sad you didn't get to see this as a young person, Emily, because I feel like this would have been your jam then.
Was my jam then. I saw every movie I saw, I was like, that's either a 99 or a 100 or a zero. And
it does feel like, you know, and well, we'll talk about this because the movie that we're releasing next week sort of falls into this category a little bit, Emily. We'll get to it in a second when we get to the end. But I do think that the songs really work. I think that perhaps a 11 or 12 year old Emily St. James might have locked on to some of the musical components. Do you think that that's a possibility?
One of my great fantasies was becoming tiny. I wanted to be like, I saw Honey I Shrunk the Kids and was like, I want to be a little small person. And like, that is still like in the back of my brain. Like, I watched this movie and I was like, do I still want to be like a bug person? Do is that a still a thing I think? And you know what, I think if I could be like little and have wings and do magic, I would. I think I would succeed. I think I would thrive as a pixie. I just want to be clear.
I think you would
that.
Too.
Yeah.
Well, here's the other question. Would you want to downsize, like in the film Downsizing?
Well, I don't get magic powers. I don't get magic powers or wings. So,
no, but you're little. You said you wanted to be a little person.
I mean, I wouldn't mind being little. I think that would be kind of fun. The problem with downsizing is that then everything. Stupid
cat.
Fucking cat. The problem with downsizing is that they just downsize everything. So yeah. You have to speak about movies that are kind of incoherent about climate change, but also kind of great.
Downsizing for sure. Yep.
But yeah, they make everything small as well. So you're kind of just living in your normal world, but now you're small. I want to have to fight like bugs and like have a cat be the scariest thing I could possibly see. Like, that's what I want. That's the kind of person I want to be.
That is so terrifying to me. No,
I like imagining a tiny Emily St. James on a beetle flying around. Sounds great.
That sounds fucking dope.
Yeah, sounds great. Yeah, it sounds
great. Let's do that. Let's make that happen.
I'm literally so terrified. I'm the opposite. I had the opposite reaction for all of those movies. Like, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience at Disney was like the scariest thing to me to be in that attraction.
What's
like,
that? I don't know that.
It's like visual like movie experience. It was in the old Captain EO theater. That's what was the next thing they put in there.
Wasn't it one of Rick Moranis's last things before he went off and like semi-retired? Yeah.
And so it's just like a little, it was like an interactive experience. You'd go in there and you get into the movie theater, and then they're like, woo, we shrunk the audience. And so like, no. You have the point of view in like your 3D glasses of being tiny and having to like, it's scary. Like a lawnmower coming at you and you're in the blades of grass, like all that kind of stuff. No. I do not want to have to. I mean, literally everything will kill you. Everything.
That's surprising. Yeah. I think I would have. I think. I mean, I'm not a ride person. I don't go on rides because.
I thought you were going to say you're not a tiny person. I was like, none of us is, and that's the problem.
Anyway, I Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which we covered on our Patreon for 1989 a few years ago. Like that movie. I like that movie. I think the movie's good.
Fucking slaps. I love that movie.
I've not seen Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, which came out in 1992, which is something we might cover in the future.
I'm kind of mad that we haven't covered it yet.
We'll cover it whenever you want to cover it.
There's a young Carrie Russell in it. Yeah, she's the love interest. Let's just you and I do Honey, I Blew Up the Kid because it's
done.
It's a bad sequel, honestly.
It's
one of the first movies I remember being like really wanting to see and then not going to see in the theaters. Mm. But like, because it's just like, I mean, the logic sort of makes sense. Okay, we made everything small in the first one. Now we're going to make one kid big. Yeah. But it's also just like, no, I've seen that a billion times. I want to see more little tiny people and they have to fight bugs and stuff.
But did they, in the third one, Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves,
which is direct to video, but yes,
direct to video,
and they did the right. They did the right thing, which is now they're inside. Like, that's what they should have done with. It should have been Honey, I Shrunk the Kids again, and they should have had to be inside. And like, maybe it could be like Honey, I Shrunk You, and it's just like about a wife that's small.
Love
that.
You want to be tiny wife?
Look, you would be tiny.
You're like, I volunteer to be tiny wife. Oh my gosh.
That's a TLC show. That's what David Zaslav, call me, develop shrinking technology and I will play tiny wife on your reality show.
Tiny wife.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I mean, I'd watch that.
Tiny wife, happy life.
Is that just watching Emily just be Emily, but she's tiny? Is that?
Well, you know, every so often you'll be like, how will Emily survive this? And then you'll like put an ant in with me, or like the season finale is one of my cats comes to find me
and knocks over like a cup of coffee. And then all of a sudden you're like riding a wave of coffee.
This does sound like really hard to exist as a tiny person.
I mean, I'm trying to think, like, there have been a lot of movies about things being shrunk or tiny.
Yeah, Inner Space.
Mm-hmm. Great movie. I fucking love Inner Space.
I want to be clear when I say I want to be a tiny person. I mean, I want to be a quarter inch tall. Like, no, I'm not. Because there are obviously people who are, you know, have dwarfism or whatever, who are wonderful and everything. Yeah. I want to be shrunk artificially to the size of a quarter inch tall.
Right, and then so like the size of a peanut.
Yeah, and then to do battle with like insects. Sure. Like that's my dream for my life.
So while we talk,
why are we talking about this?
This is what we should be talking about, obviously, because Ferngully is about little things.
This is true.
I want to ask one follow-up question on the tiny things. What are your thoughts on little houses? You know, like this,
homes?
Tiny homes, yeah, sorry.
The tiny home movement.
The tiny home movement. What are your
thoughts?
I think
it is a terrible scam. Yes, I do. You can't spell terrible without Terry. I think it is a terrible scam because it's this thing of they're like, well, we've decimated the economy. We've decimated everything for you all this generation. What is left for you? You could aspire to a tiny home. Like literally, I'm like, they are really doing a number on us.
About it that way.
The ad campaign, the marketing that is behind that stuff, the HGTV shows on it. I'm like, they're like, sorry, we literally can't give you guys anything. You can hope to own 150 square feet. That's it. If you can't function in that, there's something wrong with you. Like that whole thing. I don't like it.
We're in a space where the housing supply in the United States has been stagnant for 30 years. We need to build more housing. You know, we need to build more public housing. We need to build more like apartment complexes. We need to build more low income housing, all this stuff. And the solution to that has been, what if we just made little boxes that we could like make people go in the box? And like, if you're going to do that, just put them all in the same building. And then you kind of like have a situation where a lot of people are kind of in the same camaraderie. And obviously there have been problems with this in the past, but like, I don't feel like those problems are unsolvable to the degree that we need to make everybody live in just like a little like tiny postage stamp, except for me when I'm tiny.
And there's so many apartments that are just empty. So that's a whole nother thing. We can get into I sit there. That's like my late night thing is I watch infrastructure videos. I'm such a like infrastructure nerd. And that's like my happy place.
Terry,
yeah.
You and I have talked about the city nerd, right?
Oh, yes.
He's a YouTuber who is my husband. I'm kind of in love with him. He's a very boring white man who talks about infrastructure. And I'm like,
give it to me all day.
This is incredible.
To the degree that I have Googled whether he's married and been like, the problem is he lives in Vegas, so like I don't want to live in Vegas.
Vegas should not exist. It's so weird. I just don't understand how, like, there's nothing, no water.
Not wanting to break up his marriage comes second to not wanting to live in Vegas in my book, you know. But I think the city nerd and I would be very happy together. Not wanting to break up my marriage comes third, evidently.
YouTube channel Or a podcast?
Yeah, yeah, it's a YouTube
channel. Oh. Yeah, he's amazing. Oh, okay. And he just talks about, like, he'll, like, rank cities in terms of, you know, walkability or whatever. He's very, like, a new urbanism, which is a movement I can get behind. He doesn't have a lot of great feelings about Los Angeles, but he does prefer it to many other metropolitan areas that are much worse. So that's the thing about Los Angeles, is the city nerd thinks it's mid, so therefore I can stay.
I just want to say that you should end every sentence, Emily, with "until I'm tiny."
Listen, if the city nerd and I could live in a little tiny box together and we had, like, doll furniture and that was how we, like, got around and worked, I think that's, like, my dream, is that tomorrow I wake up, you know, very small, and there's little doll furniture. I'm like Polly Pocket size. Mm-hmm. And I look over and who else is there? And he's the city nerd. And he says, "Who are you?" And I'm like, "I'm your new tiny wife and you're my tiny husband. And we have to make do in our little box house." And he's like, "But what if a cat comes?" And I'm like, "We're going to fight the cat."
That's okay. So we're making tiny fiction. Yes. And I'm
tiny
into
fanfic.
It.
What's the problem?
Yeah.
So question for the group, favorite song from Fern Gully. Do you have a favorite song?
Oh gosh. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Toxic Love, of course.
Okay.
I'm a karaoke jockey as well. People call me Teriyoki. That is one of my things out in the world that I do. People always ask me, like, what song, you know, if they don't have an idea for a song, and, you know, people want me to pick something for them. And I'm like, ugh, I hate picking songs. So, like, for people, I'm like, give me some options. But if they don't have any options, I give them Toxic by Britney Spears, which I think is also a perfect song.
Yeah.
So anything about toxic love, apparently, I guess, is my jam. I don't know what that says about me and my
toxicity
singlehood.
Is your jam.
Toxicity. Yeah. Yes. I love Wake Up. I love it all. But Toxic Love is great, and it's also very sexy, and it's Tim Curry, who is one of my favorite actors. My cats are literally named Rocky and Frankie. Amazing. For a reason.
Sure.
So
I mean, it's also actually a really well animated sequence as well. Mm-hmm. Like the surrealism of the way that
oozy goozy, it's great.
Yeah, it's definitely the best song. But I
cannot believe I talked about how attractive I find the city nerd on a publicly available podcast. City nerd, I'm not actually coming to break up your marriage or make you tiny. If you happen to hear this, I think you're wonderful and I love your YouTube channel.
This is incredible.
I like this disclaimer. No, sometimes you have to, though. There's some other YouTuber / podcaster person who just got in trouble for saying some hyperbole and lost one of their sponsorships.
Really?
Because they were like, this lady, they went on a tour, a European tour, a wine tour, and ended up having to do some crazy walking thing and said she wanted to kill the lady who was the tour guide, because she didn't realize it was a legit walking tour. She had to walk like a mile, and not just go taste wines. And so...
That's amazing.
The joke's on them. We don't have any sponsorships.
Yeah,
Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, it all worked out. I do think if I'm going to eat somebody, it might as well be you, performed by Tone Loc, is a good song.
I thought you were just starting a new conversation. I was like, Phil, what?
No, that's the name of the song.
No, I know. I love the first song, which I think is like the intro song to kind of Fern Gully. I like opening
that's
song.
That's a nice song.
Yeah. That's,
did you like Batty's Rap?
Life is a Magic Thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, listen, in general, I think Robin Williams should not be allowed to rap. That's just a thing that a feeling I have. Batty's Rap is fine, but like, I just, go ahead.
Oh no, you're fine. I just was like, my autobiography, as I've always dubbed it, I'm like, it's in my notes app on my phone, is called White People Rapping at Karaoke. And that's just it. For those who don't know, who are just listening right now, I am African-American. I am a Black person here. The amount of times I'm just like, well, and depending on the song choice, I'm like, hey, do you have alternate lyrics prepared for when you get to the words you need to have alternate lyrics for white people? It is a trip. So I love Robin Williams, To the Moon and Back, Always and Forever. And I will have to agree with you, Emily. I support that.
I think, I mean, obviously there are some white people who can rap, but
absolutely.
I think for the most part, white people should skew toward patter numbers from musicals. Like, I will do the I'll just sing the fuck out of like anything from the Music Man, because that is specifically pitched at my cultural background of
Some Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now I gotta talk to Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah, now we gotta talk about Studio 60.
I gotta go make sure my baby's not dying.
Oh,
I'll be back.
Okay. Yeah, I first and foremost, I agree with your assessment that Robin Williams probably shouldn't rap. But I also feel like, and I feel like this is the right person to ask this, because it does feel like late 80s, early 90s, when rap is starting to really kind of, its ascension is starting to happen. And you have
becomes
mainstream. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of these, your Vanilla Ices, you know what I mean? You're these situations where you just have a white person that's like, well, I can do that too. Yep. Part of it being, I'm sure that they're just like this, let's just say resentment towards the fact that there is a subculture that they cannot quote unquote be a part of.
Yeah.
And I do sort of feel like this is obviously, aside from Ferngully, Robin Williams is just having fun. And I think that they're trying to be silly, and they're just for kids.
Of
and
course.
It is what it is.
I love him.
And I don't think that this is, I do not think that Batty is trying to culturally appropriate anything.
No,
but at the same time, I agree with what you're saying, which is that, white people should stay away from it. I would say more times than not.
Yeah, it depends. It wholeheartedly depends. It's just this weird thing of like some of the biggest rappers now are white, and it's very strange. Not strange of just like they, I know that there are better flowing artists and stuff like that that's just not the same support that are black, and that is upsetting. Oh my gosh, there is a cute baby.
Oh. And it's the cute. She's looking sleepy.
Yeah. The thing is, baby just woke up and has been kind of babbling a little bit. And now normally would be in daycare at this time, but our daycare is closed today. So
I love this baby.
Baby has to hang out with us, and she finds us extremely boring. So
I'm so not mad. I love you so much. And a baby is not impressed, and I'm okay.
Yeah. She's usually a lot more because she just woke up.
Yeah. Judge me, baby. Judge me.
But
okay.
Usually eyes filled with wonder and excitement at screens.
Yes.
So, you know.
Now she knows that she can watch Bluey, and she's mad we're not watching Bluey.
I get it.
So,
I get it. Yeah.
Now she's going to go eat food. Good for her.
Great. Yeah, as she should. So I think that the one scene I wanted to point out that I did think was cute between Krista and Zach is the scene when they're talking about human life and like it's a little bit of the sort of fish out of water stuff. There's a real kind of cute vibe going on between the two of them there. And I think that it's probably the most endearing scene that they have in the film. I think the scene with the Walkman when they find Zach's Walkman is fun.
And Pips tries to like be like, oh yeah, I know how it works, and then he gets
voiced by Christian Slater.
Yes, and they have the who I also love and also met in the 90s. I love him so much. Oh god.
I think believe that's him and Samantha Mathis dated, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, they did. Yeah, I was like, Lord.
I wish, like, the nice thing, the thing about getting acquainted with Samantha Mathis now is that I'm seeing what I would have been going for if I had been born cis, because I would just have been like spent all of the early 90s trying to capture her whole deal. The only thing I'd seen her in, only things I'd seen her in before we did this podcast were Little Women 94, obviously the best version of that story, everyone's favorite. And the strain. Is that what it was called? The Vampire Show on FX?
She was on The Strain?
Yeah, she played a city council member who's like, I think these vampires are becoming a problem.
That's wild. I did not know that. Oh,
I
my
have
God.
Not seen A Thing Called Love, but now I feel like I know.
Oh, yeah.
It's so
she's
good.
She's great in that. Oh, she's so good in that.
River Phoenix and Sandy Bullock and Dermot Mulroney. They're all so good in it. It's such a fun movie.
I'm adding this to my list. It's on Showtime right now. There you go.
It was very, very.
I'm going to check that out for sure.
Seminal for my upbringing. Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, Christian Slater's voice is so recognizable, but it works. And I also have to say, too, that the arc of Pip's character, I thought, was kind of great. in the sense that he's a little bit of the villain, only insofar as that he's obviously jealous of the fact that Krista is into a human, into Zach and not him. But he doesn't turn out to be the bad guy. Like, at the end of the day, he's there and he helps and probably ends up with Krista anyway, because Zach goes back to being a human. Mm-hmm. But like, I just appreciated the fact that whenever a movie, and it still happens, but like when a movie character zigs instead of zags, is always just a nice surprise at the end. They had a big bad, obviously, in the Tim Curry character. So like, they didn't need like it worked out in the end, but I really liked him in this. I thought he was great.
Well, everyone's united against pollution, right, Emily?
Yeah, exactly. We all hate pollution. And we should also we should just dump as many chemicals as we want into the river, because it's our river to despoil as we like. And if we kill all the animals, kill all the animals, that's fine. Because guess what? Once we talk to those people in the Indian Ocean, it's all over. It's all,
Jesus comes back. It'll be fine. Yeah.
Exactly. It's going to be great.
I did like that like Krista sacrifices herself at the end. For the greater good, and like she really kind of turns into a bit of a badass at the end of this movie, in the sense of which I liked that ultimately it was her story and that it really wasn't Zach's story, which again, sort of,
she's really the final girl.
Surprising in 92 in an animated movie. Like, again, I think this movie is I hate to say it, but I think it's a lot bolder than, you know, than I expected it to be.
Yes!
You know what I mean? Like, it does have a female protagonist who has a journey that I thought is really, for the most part, independently minded. Even if she does sort of fall for Zach, she kind of doesn't as well. That it has a positive climate change message. Like, I don't know. I was kind of surprised.
I'm sure they were both down for it. I feel like that's like, I'm just remembering too. I was just looking through Samantha's stuff again. I was like, oh yeah, Pump Up the Volume came out in 1990.
Yep.
And so it also has a similar-ish kind of like, not environment, but like just like power to the people, kind of like we have the opportunity to change the world, coming from the young folks message. And I think that's interesting too, because it's her and Christian, obviously, again, coming back and kind of doing this. So maybe I feel like maybe that's kind of from that mindset that they're pushing to have this done. So
Emily, mm-hmm. you seem to be doing a little bit of a Samantha Mathis deep dive to some degree. Mm-hmm. Where did she go? Do we have any idea?
She
to, like,
still does TV.
Happened?
Yeah.
Well, she's done a shit ton of TV. In the sense that, like, it does feel like she kind of disappeared for a little while there.
Yeah, I think she just never popped. You know, she could not be a credible rom-com star in the way that, like, I think Sandra Bullock ate her lunch. I think Sandra Bullock just hit that lane. The end of Thing Called Love is Sandra Bullock leaving Nashville to go to New York to become a movie star.
Spoiler,
and the next movie she makes is Speed. Phil, you are not going to be spoiled by me telling you the ending of Thing Called Love. It is... you have seen that movie 500 times before, just not with this collection of characters. That's what's great about it. But the next movie she makes is Speed. So like, it's just
off to the races at that point. Yeah. I mean, I do think that for Samantha Mathis, Broken Arrow, where she plays again the love interest to Christian Slater, ironically, is probably the last time that she's a co-lead of a movie. Of a significant movie. It does feel like from that point on, it's mostly supporting and smaller roles, which is a bummer because I really like her.
I mean, she is in American Psycho, which, you know, is...
She is.
But yeah, it's not like she's got... I mean, by the time she's doing Atlas Shrugged Part 2, it's just sort of like, she's taking what she can get. She gets really great work in television now, which is cool and good for her. But it's... I mean, she was very fun on The Strain. And she's been...
I will love her forever.
She was very fun on Billions, too. Like,
Oh, that's right. She's on Billions. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, I've always really liked her. As we discussed on our This Is My Life episode, I think she's great in that. I think that she... Yeah. I think you're absolutely right, Emily, that like Sandra Bullock just kind of eats her lunch and that's kind of what happens. But it's still fascinating nonetheless. But... So yeah, basically, you know, at the end of this movie, they defeat Tim Curry by essentially growing a plant inside him, which sort of traps him inside a tree, which is pretty rad. I gotta say, when he so they you think he's dead at one point because they kind of like blow him up, but then he turns into this like fire demon thing that I was like, this is actually kind of like scary. I imagine that for kids it might have been a little bit scary.
It was for the little kids I went with to the movie. Yes, yeah. It was a little bit, yeah.
But then Krista essentially like plants a seed inside him, and he gets sort of trapped inside a tree again, where he was sort of trapped in the beginning, until the I guess the construction kind of cut down the tree and let him out, for lack of a better way of putting it. But
I don't think I would like to become a tree. No. Tiny person, yes. I don't want to become a tree. That sounds,
yeah, that's
once bad. On this island anyway. Yeah. Musical theater reference, kids. The end, one of the characters ends up a tree. Yeah. I hate it every time. It's so devastating.
So at the end of these episodes, Terry, we rate our films. We rate them from 0 to 99, 0 being the lowest, 99 obviously being the highest. Mm-hmm. We try to rate it back in 92, then we rate it today to see sort of how our perspectives have changed.
Phil, can I ask you something before we rate?
Yeah.
If you would, you marry a like a fairy pixie person? Because I think when people think of this movie's Avatar, that's what they're thinking about, is like that sort of almost romance, but also like the vibes of this movie are similar. Environmentalist message, like a strong kind of female character who ends up sort of being the protagonist and lead of the movie. Obviously, like, you know, there are, you know, the giant tree is destroyed or whatever. Like, there are superficial similarities, but I think thematically that's what people are grasping onto. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, I do strongly feel like Zach should have stayed tiny. And that's not just because I want to be tiny. It's because I feel like that is like, I don't know. I just don't believe.
Are you asking if I would stay tiny? Would you stay tiny?
No. I don't think that would be a good idea. If you were suddenly tiny and you met a tiny fairy and they were like falling in love with you.
And she was Samantha Mathis, essentially.
Is she Samantha Mathis, and does she kind of look like Bjork? I mean, yes.
Yeah, seems like you're kind of jam. Wouldn't you get tired of her having magic powers and you not having magic powers? Or would that be okay?
I mean, I think I'd be okay. I mean, if I'm being completely real, I would love to be a kept fairy. You know what I mean? Like, that sounds great to me. If I could find
a way.
He just does magic things for you all the time and just makes your life fully magical. Yeah.
It's great. And I have like a giant Walkman where I can listen to my, then what else do I need? Really?
And have a dance party every now and again.
Sounds great. Yeah. And like, you know, from a food perspective, I mean, you could live on like a grape for days.
Yeah. That's what's great about like being tiny. Yeah.
Right? So, you know, I think this is, Not to go back to downsizing, but it does feel like downsizing's whole thing is like, if we can just make ourselves smaller, then we can live longer because of all the things we have in the world.
I feel like if you were
so we can save our resources. Yeah.
It should just
be better with the ones we have, maybe.
Yeah, I would agree.
If you were that small, you could survive off like nectar. Which would be cool. You could just like dump like a little nectar into your mouth and be like, I'm good for the
day. Or like a grain of sugar. Yeah. You'd be like, it's like a salt lick for months.
Yeah.
Ugh. I hate this so much. I do not. I don't know. There's something I don't know why. The aversion to me, it makes me so angry. I think it's just one of those things where I'm just like, I don't want less. I mean, I get capitalism is bad, but I do not want tiny. I just think it's misguided. I think it's evil. I think it comes from a place of worry and fear. I do not like.
This is like, I love, you would be like on stage at a political debate and everyone would be like, well, we should become tiny. And you'd be like, no, it is not right.
Looking
at my baby, the baby is doing so much work to grow up. Like, it's so much work to grow up and learn everything. And we all went through that and we should all be proud of that and not want to become tiny. And yet, look at me. I do. There's a tabletop role playing game called Household. This is the last I'm going to talk about this, I promise. But it is about like little like people fighting each other and like having adventures in a big house, like little like fairies, borrowers, that sort of thing. And I've always wanted to play it, but I'm not sure, you know, if I'm ready for the experience, because one time I played a role playing game and became a girl, and now I'm just like worried I'm going to like unlock a thing for myself
and become tiny.
Well, no, because I can't become tiny and I might just get so sad.
So in terms of rating this film, in 1992, as I mentioned, I saw it. I have a vague recollection of seeing it and thinking it was fine. I think I probably would have given it like a 60. I didn't really love it as a kid. I liked it a lot more this time. I'm going to give this film a 70. I think that this movie is its message is great. I dug some of the songs. I think the supporting voices are pretty phenomenal. So yeah, I'm at a 70 on this, but where are you, Terry? Where were you in 92 and where do you think you are now?
Oh my gosh. In 1992, I was at a slumber party for a child watching this movie and with a 2-year-old and a bunch of 5-year-olds and my friend's mom and my best friend. And I probably gave this movie like an 85 or 90. I'm
wow.
guessing,
okay.
you know,
All right.
as
All
a
right.
child, I was very easily impressed. I was also very sheltered. So I was also always excited to go see a movie in the theater because we didn't always get to do that. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of a big deal. And also I felt like the cool big kid. So I probably had like some cool points being like, oh yeah, this movie's great. So I feel like I probably puffed it up more than it was with the kids because I was excited to hang out with them and talk about it after and stay up late and gab about it. Today I would probably give it like, you know, like a 65, like, you know, in hindsight I'm like, oh wow, yeah. I know, speaking with Emily today too, you know, some of the animation I'm like, yep, that does not hold sure. up the same way watching some of those old classic Disney films do, as we do on the Disney Plus sometimes. And you know, it's Yeah.
I hear you. That's fair.
I think, but also I was also pleasantly surprised by some of the moments, like I said, like Toxic Love. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, this is so cool. And yeah, but also just that Zach character killed me.
His look is also pretty shitty too. He's got kind of like almost like a mullet and like he's got kind of a MAGA vibe that I was just like not really into aesthetically.
Very turned off and very mad that she was so. But also I'm like, yes, please embrace these guys. They do need love. Everybody needs love. And maybe that'll help save the day. But also I was just disgusted. So
he looks like if Jonathan Taylor Thomas and a mouse did the fly and became the same.
Very that.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Oh, I get it. JTT was seminal, obviously, of this moment. I mean, and like he's very giving that vibe for sure. I guess like if you're going to tailor it up with somebody everyone's like hot for, that's like of that era.
So Emily, what's your rating on Ferngully?
I just want to
not seen it in 92.
I want to be clear. In 1992, I gave this movie sight unseen a -666.
It was of the devil. Okay,
it was
great.
Of the devil.
Sure.
Negative. Mm-hmm. I can't sit here in good conscience and say I had a great time watching this movie. I did like the songs. I did like Tim Curry a lot. I think Robin Williams is kind of too much. I think the genius of Aladdin is it finds the right Robin Williams stuff to use. And I think these guys were just like, we have so much Robin Williams, let's use all of it. And I think that was not always the right choice. I like a lot of elements of it. I don't think it quite gels, but because y'all made me feel I had such a good time talking about it and I had such a good time imagining becoming tiny and having a tiny husband, I'm going to give it a 52. just over the line of recommendation.
That's surprising. Look at you.
That's supposed the conversation led you to your little fantasy, your tiny fantasies. And thus
that's like if you come up to me in the street and you say, should I watch Ferngully? I'll start to say no. And then I'll be like, let's talk about tininess. How do you feel about it?
Have you ever thought about being super small? Yeah.
So, Terry, I'm curious on your thoughts of the film that we're covering next week. We are talking about Sister Act. Stacey Traub came on to talk Sister Act with us. Do you have thoughts on Sister Act? Did you see it in 92?
Of course I saw it. I It is like, okay, I don't even know. I'm just like, I'm so mad it wasn't. It's fine. Because Sister Act 2 is really where it's at anyway. You know, yes, back in the
habit. That's what people say.
Habit, honestly. Anytime that movie is on TV, like, it does not matter, like, where I am. I'm going to have to stop and finish it. But Sister Act, the OG, also was just, like, seminal for, like, being like, oh, my God. I recently played a nun on TV. And honestly, everyone, the jokes that we made walking around in habits, having to, like, you know, being like, oh, Ave Maria. You know, that also was one of those things where I was like, okay, I can see myself. Honestly, because Whoopi Goldberg for me was like, it still is. Like one of my Guiding Light Beacon legends, I was like, I want to do One Woman Show on Broadway. I'm going to be Whoopi Goldberg. Like in my brain as a young person, like she was everything. And the way that it was recently, my brother sent me like a little clip of an interview from back in the day, and I forget which blonde white lady news lady was asking her questions, but it was one of them, and asking her, you know, like, well, why do you feel so? How do you feel, you know, being like against all these like skinny, gorgeous people? You know, like literally point blank, being like. How are you, like, are you okay being ugly, essentially? Do you know what I mean? Oh, no, and it was like, almost every interview, constantly they would ask her that shit. And the fact that she was able to carve out and just hold herself, and she already knows who she is so much from the inside, and to like go against all of that, to still be a fucking lead, to still like, I mean, literally make some of the best movies, to win an EGOT status. Do you know what I mean? Though, just be like, fuck you all. Like, and this was one of the ones that really put her like on another level. Yes. Doing this particular franchise. And so I just like have nothing but good things to say about it. Also, strangely though, with my, you know, even with my weird interaction with the Catholic Church, because Adventists believe that, like, thought that, like, you know, they think like, I mean, for a while growing up, basically a central group, think that the Pope was like the Antichrist, because that's cool. Because Catholicism, sure, means universal. That's like the like translation, and we're supposed to be not of this universe, and so everyone who's Catholic essentially was like evil to us. So it's a whole nother level of weirdness, but I loved that movie and we still loved it in our house, so that's how good it was that it cut through the Adventist layer to be okay, you know. And
well,
enjoy.
We talked about that a little bit on the episode, Emily, in terms of like how this movie, mm-hmm, read for you back then.
Yeah, I dated a Seventh-day Adventist in high school. And,
so sorry. I mean,
she and her family would like, they hid their TV in a closet. And
yeah, on Friday night.
Pull it out and, mm-hmm, like, yeah. Phil, the thing about like discussing anything in this country right now is that I feel like there are a lot of people who didn't grow up in this milieu who don't realize there's a lot of, like, there's fully 30% of the country that believes crazy fucking bullshit and like bases everything they do around that, and you can't win them over, and they don't live in the same reality as you. Yeah. And that's what Ferngully's about.
Ferngully's about being tiny
and also being... Yeah, I want to see Aaron Sorkin's Ferngully where he really grapples with this.
Would watch. I'd be curious.
Wild.
It'd be so wild. I'm sure that Krista would fall down a lot. She'd fall into a pool or something at some point. Yeah. But I think that our Sister Act episode is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It's that movie is legitimately great. I think Whoopi is. We talk obviously a lot of Whoopi on that episode, but it needs to be said sort of again just how much of a, unfortunately, how much of an anomaly she was in 92 and how gigantic a movie star she
was. In 92 still.
And sorry. You know what I mean? Like, oh no, still for sure. But I just mean the fact that, like, you know, a black female actress comedian is, you know what I mean? Just such a groundbreaking, phenomenal performer. And it's just it's written all over that movie. She's just so unbelievably winning.
Yeah, she's stellar. But also, I mean, the fact that the people around her, between Maggie Smith, Harvey Keitel, cast that's around her, is absolutely phenomenal. All those, I mean, Kathy Najimy, like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I saw that performance, I was like, oh, that's what I want to do. Do you know what I mean? Though, like, sure, that was like, she was one of those people too. I was like, okay, like, I guess that's what it is too. It's like all these character actresses. I was like, oh. You know, when you like see yourself, I could be any of these ladies, like any of these folks. Like, I absolutely, in my future, I see myself.
Yeah, I feel like both Sistrax are really special movies, like a very special sort of. There is a reason why they have stood the test of time and why people still talk about them. It was a great episode, but more than anything, Terry, thank you so much for coming on and talking about Ferngully with us.
Thank you for watching that, Emily. Thank you, Phil, for enjoying it. Oh, thank you. thank you for having me.
Thank you for going on this tiny journey with us. You know, it was, we talked tiny for
tiny people. Dun, dun.
I mean, now I feel like we need to do like an animated movie of Tiny Emily.
There was I was on Blank Check recently as we're recording this, and there was discussion in the Blank Check Discord about how in the Blank Check Reddit about how people should listen to this show, and I'm not quite as chaotic here as I am on Blank Check because I have to be like a co-host, and I feel like this episode is just giving the lie to that.
This episode proves that not to be true. Yeah. Emily definitely brings chaos to this podcast. It's just a different type of
chaos. She goes, what do you mean, everywhere she goes? That is my favorite thing about her. It is literally my favorite thing. I am so obsessed with you, Emily. You know this.
As our listeners probably know, Emily, you can tell if Emily is going to be chaotic at the top of an episode, because she comes in a way where you're just like, okay, so this is, generally speaking, it's about movies that she perhaps didn't like as much. I just feel like when she comes in and says, oh, we're not going to go long, to me, that feels like that's when Emily's going to get chaotic.
We're recording Howard's End on Monday.
We are.
Let's find out who I want to marry. Let's find out who I want to marry in that movie. That's going to be interesting.
So I've never seen Howard's End. So I'm just
fucking great.
Oh my God, it's good. Oh, you're in for a treat, Phil. Oh, it's so good.
Honestly, Merchant Ivory is kind of a big blind spot for me. I haven't seen Remains of the Day. I haven't seen a room with a View. Like, these are just, I know. It's a big blind spot for
me. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I'm just... Honestly, I kind of wish I could watch all of them for the first time. You know what I mean? Like right now. Sure. That's so beautiful.
I'm super excited. I feel like it's going to open up a whole new door for me.
Terry, yeah. Have you seen Maurice? Morris? I can't remember how to pronounce it.
I think it's Maurice.
It's Maurice.
Have I?
You might know, like, it's the Merchant Ivory movie that is like the first mainstream Hollywood film to really talk about like gay men. Where they like kind of used a lot of their capital to make.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hugh Grant. Oh. Yeah. Oh yeah. Me going down my gay rabbit hole, you're like renting things like as a child, like need it. Yes. Oh my God, yes.
Well, I'm super excited to watch Howard's End. Terry, where can people listen to you, see you, read you?
Oh my gosh, you can find me on the internet, you guys, at the Terry Gamble, mostly. On most of the platforms, and that's then Terry, T-E-R-I, that's one R. Gamble, like Las Vegas. You can find me at the Terry Gamble, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of good stuff, or whatever the heck it's called now.
Right. Yeah.
Or terrygamble.com. You can find me there, and sometimes I update that too. So yeah. And then
thank you so
there's
so
still
much.
Strikes happening, double strikes. So look me up, see if you want to find those things.
thank you so much.
Your podcast, Horror Movie Survival Guide.
Oh yeah, I should talk about that.
So very fun.
Thank you.
Please.
I want to come on that and talk about being tiny.
Okay.
Go on.
Please. Yes.
Here's one last question for you guys. Yeah. I have an answer in my head, but I'm curious. What's the scariest tiny person in a movie?
I don't think there's, I don't know, I just, the first thing that popped in my head was like freaks, but they're not scary to me. Like the problem is that the mean people are the terrible people who don't understand the freaks, if that's an old classic film.
Because my brain goes to when the grandparents get really little at the end of Mulholland Drive.
I was like a gnome named Gnorm. I don't know.
the 1950s movie Incredible Shrinking Man. The man in that is not scary, but he, like, the sequence where he fights the spider is pretty intense.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll check that out. Terry, this was fantastic. We're so thankful for you taking the time to talk Ferngully with us, and we hope that you'll come back in the future to talk about something else.
Oh my God, thank you so much. This was so delightful. Well, you all are just everything I wanted and more. Thank you.
Thank you so, so much. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Podcast Addicts. Podcast Addicts. 1992. Podcast Addicts. Podcast Addicts. 1992. 1992.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.